You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast series, Best Practices for the Multidisciplinary Management of NHL Using Antibody Therapeutics. This podcast is designed to meet the educational needs of community-based oncologists, hematologists, nurse practitioners, pharmacists, and other members of the multidisciplinary oncology care team. In this episode, we discuss the role of novel antibody therapeutics in the management of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, as well as key clinical data supporting their use. My name is Dr. Sunali Wadera, and I am pleased to host today's podcast. I'm joined by Dr. Mehdi Hamadani, Professor of Medicine and Chief of Hematologic Malignancies at the Medical College of Wisconsin in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Welcome, Dr. Hamadani.
Hi, it's a pleasure to speak with you.
So, Dr. Hamadani, let's start with a brief case for our discussion. A 74-year-old white male with a past medical history significant for dyslipidemia and hypertension, as well as a family history significant for multiple myeloma in his brother, presents to your clinic with a growing mass in his chest wall, palpable on examination, along with significant weight loss. Imaging studies support this finding, and core needle biopsy is consistent with non-GCB DLBCL, CD20 positive, CD10 negative, BCL6 negative, MYC positive, BCL2 positive, EBER negative, Ki-67 70%, FISH negative for MYC and BCL2 rearrangements. You determine the patient has stage 4 disease with an IPI of 4. You initiate treatment with 3 cycles of R-CHOP, noting slowly responsive disease on CT, then administering 3 more cycles of R-CHOP. Based on repeat biopsy, you determine at the end of treatment that the patient has primary refractory disease, and you proceed to second-line therapy administering CD19-directed CAR T-cell therapy with axi-cel following polatuzumab vedotin-based bridging. The patient continues to progress with a new and rapidly enlarging mass noted in the left flank region per physical exam and imaging study. Dr. Hamadani, what are important next steps in treating this patient?
Hi, thank you, Dr. Wadera. This is not an uncommon clinical scenario. So we have to think about the biology of this case. This patient has what we would call primary refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma that is unfortunately also refractory to CD19-directed CAR T-cell therapies. So currently, management of patients who fail curative therapies with CD19-directed CAR T-cell therapy is an area of unmet need. So in this particular case, once you determine CAR T-cell failure, there are several considerations to keep in mind. Number one, you have to assess patients' performance status and their suitability and willingness to proceed with further treatments. So typically in this setting, I do have a conversation about goals of care with the patient. In patients who want to proceed with further therapies, with the understanding that further therapies may not be curative, and patients who have the performance status to tolerate further treatment, a typical next step, in my opinion, is to repeat a biopsy to confirm not only presence of refractory disease, but also to assess the presence of CD19 on the surface of lymphoma cells. Remember, this patient has just gotten CD19-directed CAR T-cell therapy, where CD19 loss, while uncommon, is by no means rare. It happens in about 25 to 30% of the patients, and the knowledge of CD19 expression may determine the suitability of subsequent therapies in this gentleman's case. The third point that I will point out is this patient received bridging therapy with polatuzumab vedotin. So an assessment of, if possible, whether patient responded to polatuzumab bridge or not is important, because if you have clinical or radiographic evidence that patient was not responding to polatuzumab bridge, will make polatuzumab-based therapies a less attractive option in subsequent lines of therapy.
So with that being said, what are broad treatment options in this case and some key considerations when selecting next best therapies for a patient with relapse refractory DLBCL?
So excellent question. I think when thinking about post-CAR T-cell therapies, I usually divide the scenarios into two broad areas. Number one, are patients relapsing with CD19 negative disease? That's one question you have to ask. And the second question is the care setting of the patient. Are patients willing to travel still to large academic medical centers for care? Or is their focus now to get treatments more in the local setting? And also, I think the timing of CAR T-cell failure is also very important. Patients who have primary refractory CAR T-cell failure, and we generally define it to patients who never respond to CAR T-cell therapy or the treatment fails the patient within 6 months, that pattern of CAR T-cell failure makes some treatment options more attractive and others less attractive. Patient's choice of location is also important. So keeping these pointers in mind, the broad options available in this setting is, number one, if patient has never seen polatuzumab vedotin, then polatuzumab in combination with Rituxan and bendamustine is a reasonable option. Patients who are relapsing with no loss of CD19, loncatuximab tazarine, which is a CD19-directed antibody drug conjugate, or tafasitamab-lenalidomide combination becomes relevant. And finally, bispecific antibodies such as glofitamab and epcoritamab are also relevant therapeutic options in that setting.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your feedback on that question. Can you describe the latest clinical data supporting the use of these various agents in this patient population?
In the particular case that you shared, we are looking at a patient experiencing CD19-directed CAR T-cell failure. In such patients, the knowledge around the presence or absence of CD19 expression, the pattern of CAR T-cell failure, as well as a patient's desire and ability to travel to larger practices and academic centers to get additional immunotherapies often play a role in medical decision making. Patients who have a strong desire of getting treatment locally in centers that may not have access to more complicated immune therapies, particularly patients who are relapsing with a disease where CD19 expression is maintained. In such patients, loncatuximab tazarine, the CD19-directed antibody drug conjugate, is a readily available off-the-shelf option. LOTIS-2 trial that led to the FDA approval of loncastuximab tesirine in third-line setting, in fact, included patients with failure of CAR T-cell therapies in the past. And among such patients enrolled on the LOTIS-2 trial, the response rates with loncastuximab tesirine were approximately 45%. And the durability of these remissions is reflected in the median duration of response among such patients of about 8 months. The real-world data presented at the last ASH meetings in 2023 also seem to suggest that the pattern of CAR T-cell failure, whether the CAR T-cell therapy failed early or late, did not have a huge impact on the probability of responding to loncastuximab tesirine. So I think this is one reasonable option. A second off-the-shelf option is CD19-directed therapy with tafasitamab, which is an antibody in combination with lenalidomide. L-MIND trial that led to the FDA approval of this combination unfortunately didn't include any patients with prior CAR T-cell therapies, but the real-world data suggests that among patients who are refractory to CD19-directed CAR T-cell therapy or where this treatment fails within 6 months, the probability of a response to TAFA-LEN combination in such setting is under 10%, and that's a scenario where rarely, if ever, use this combination. But among patients where CAR T-cell therapy failure happens after a period of at least 6 months of response, then the chances of response to TAFA-LEN is about 30-33%. And I think for those patients, it is a reasonable therapy to keep in mind. The third off-the-shelf option is polatuzumab vedotin in combination with Rituxan and or bendamustine. The case we just looked at was exposed to polatuzumab as a bridge, and it appeared that the patient was likely not responding to polatuzumab bridge. So in such scenarios, polatuzumab-based options are obviously less attractive. Also, more recently, polatuzumab got FDA approval in frontline setting. So in a primary refractory patients treated with a polatuzumab-based frontline regimen, that also makes polatuzumab-based options less practical after CAR T-cell failure. But among patients who have never seen polatuzumab vedotin before CAR T-cell therapy fails, then such pola-based regimens, at least in real-world data, have been shown to produce response rates of around 40 to 45%, and these are reasonable options. And then finally, among patients who have access to large academic centers or large community practices that have experience in administering bispecific therapies, because such therapies are associated with a risk of cytokine release syndrome and neurotoxicity, so not all oncology practices are comfortable with administering these therapies. But among patients with access to such therapies, these are attractive options. Commercially approved bispecifics like glofitamab and epcoritamab target CD20, and this target is obviously non-overlapping with the target CAR T-cell therapy targets. And these drugs are obviously very active in CAR T-cell failure setting. So the two pivotal trials that led to the FDA approval of glofitamab and epcoritamab roughly included a third of patients with prior CAR T-cell therapy exposure. And among such patients, roughly the overall response rates with these bispecifics was in the 50 to 55% ballpark, depending on the pattern of CAR T-cell failure. But more notably, the complete remission rate was approximately 35 to 40%, making these agents among the more active options in CAR T-cell failure setting. and are relevant options to consider.
Now, what are your hopes regarding emerging data on these agents for the management of NHL?
Well, I think I would allude to a couple of observations. We are specifically, in this case, focusing on a patient who is CAR refractory. I already mentioned this is an area of unmet need. And just to highlight how striking the need is, published real-world data suggests that once a patient fails CAR T-cell therapy or the therapy fails the patient, the median overall survival of a patient in that setting is well below 1 year. So the emerging data suggests that bispecifics, particularly fixed duration bispecifics like glofitamab, can induce CRs in these heavily pretreated patients. And a subset of the complete remissions can be durable or long lasting. Now, it is clearly early to make a claim that bispecifics can cure patients after CAR T-cell failure happens, but that is something to follow in the coming years with more mature follow-up data from these trials. The second area of robust investigation in this particular scenario is combinations of bispecifics with other agents. There are a number of trials looking at these combinations. I'm going to share the example of LOTIS-7 trial that is looking at combining loncatuximab, tazarine with other agents like bispecifics or other ADCs. And maybe these combination regimens will provide us even higher response rates. And coming years will tell us whether those responses are more durable. I'm personally a skeptic of using CAR T-cell therapy, using a novel target after initial failure of commercial CAR T-cells, but there are ongoing trials that are looking at that approach as well, either using off-the-shelf donor-derived allogeneic CAR T-cell therapies or CAR T-cell therapies that are autologous but targeting a different antigen on the surface of the cancer cell.
Thank you so much. That's all the time we have for today. I would like to thank Dr. Hamadani for taking the time to speak today about approaches to using antibody therapeutics in the management of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and key clinical data surrounding their use. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. We hope you will enjoy some of the many other types of CME programs that MedLearning Group offers. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. In support of improving patient care, MedLearning Group is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. I would like to give a special thank you to our grant supporters, ADC Therapeutics America Incorporated, who provided an unrestricted educational grant, and Genentech, a member of the Roche Group, who provided an educational grant for this activity.